From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 8th, 2016. And on this day, Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap responds to a request from a group of lawmakers urging him to invoke a constitutional provision to remove Governor Paul LePage from office. New research finds that thousands of unlicensed guns are sold in Maine each year through classified and online ads, adding fuel to a hotly debated ballot measure on background checks. And amid the presidential campaign rhetoric about immigrants, we meet a Mexican-American family that's trying to establish roots in Downeast Maine. Those stories and more after this. This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th. kvcc.me.edu. I'm Barbara Caridi. Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap has written to a group of 11 lawmakers who requested that he act under the state constitution to remove Governor Paul LePage from office on the grounds that the governor is unfit for the job. Dunlap said that the provisions of the Constitution cited by the lawmakers to start the process do not apply.
However you feel about the message he left for Representative Gattine or his subsequent statements after that, that's not an indication that he can't do the job.
LePage came under fire after he left an obscene message on Westbrook Democratic Representative Drew Gattine's phone. Dunlap said that while LePage's use of profane language in that voicemail to one lawmaker was wrong, the governor is continuing to do his job. He said his office sees evidence every day that LePage is signing the papers and orders needed to keep the government operating. Dunlap says the provision cited by the lawmakers deals with how to remove a governor from office who is incapacitated, and he says LePage clearly is not. Meanwhile, a federal judge has dismissed claims by nurse Casey Hickox that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and state health officials violated her constitutional rights when they quarantined her after she had contact with Ebola patients in West Africa in 2014. But one of Hickox's attorneys, Steve Hyman, says two state claims in the lawsuit can move forward for false imprisonment and defamation.
Against Governor Christie, who called her sick and that she was ill and therefore was properly detained, when in fact she was not ill.
After Hickox was released from New Jersey, she returned to Maine, to her home in Fort Kent, and successfully battled a Maine policy of home quarantine. And now to efforts to expand background checks for gun sales in Maine. New research from supporters of Question 3 on the November ballot finds that unlicensed gun sales are flourishing in Maine through classified and online advertisements in publications like Uncle Henry's and on websites like armslist.com. The four-year analysis conservatively estimates that 3,000 unlicensed gun sales take place in Maine each year. But as Susan Sharon reports, there's disagreement about whether requiring background checks for nearly all gun sales and transfers would help put a stop to gun violence.
The ads in Uncle Henry's and on the website armslist.com are perfectly legal. Everything from AK-47s and 9mm semi-automatic handguns to 16-gauge shotguns. Some are offered by licensed dealers and require a background check for purchase, but many are posted by unlicensed sellers. Jonas Aransky, an attorney for Every Town for Gun Safety, says that's a problem. It represents a massive loophole in laws designed to prevent certain people from buying guns in the first place.
So a convicted felon, a convicted domestic abuser, someone under a final restraining order, all these folks that we have decided as a society are too dangerous to have guns, these folks can simply find an unlicensed seller and skip the entire enforcement process.
Looking at nearly 4 years of ads starting in 2012, a team of researchers from the Every Town for Gun Safety Action Fund found that Uncle Henry's printed about 8,400 ads for guns from more than 4,400 unlicensed sellers. ArmsList.com posted more than 700 over the last 2 years. Research Director Sarah Tofte says her team excluded want-to-buy ads, ads that were for ammunition or accessories, or that included a phone number that matched that of a licensed gun dealer. But she says the actual number of unlicensed gun sales in Maine is likely much higher.
This report certainly doesn't encompass, you know, all venues or all ways in which unlicensed sales may be taking place in Maine, but it gives us some sense of the extent of the market.
Previous research done by the group in other states suggests that 1 in 10 interested online gun buyers has a criminal history that bars them from purchasing or possessing guns under federal law. The report says evidence shows that background checks reduce gun deaths. Also, states with background checks, and there are 18 of them now, have more than 50% fewer mass shootings. But the report also says that Maine is already a safe state. And that's a fact that Kevin Webb of Uncle Henry says shouldn't be overlooked. Nor, he says, should the fact that background checks can't prevent the kind of tragedy that happened last fall in the parking lot of a Bath supermarket.
Someone met to sell a firearm to another individual. In the process, the individual whose gun it was fired it inadvertently and killed somebody, killed his girlfriend. And that's a tragedy. I understand that. But at the same time, that could have happened whether or not he was selling the gun. It has nothing to do with an unlicensed sale.
Webb says he agrees that more should be done to prevent dangerous criminals from buying or trading guns. But he doesn't think requiring background checks for nearly all gun sales and transfers is the solution. In his view, it puts another burden on those who already follow the law.
There's a $25 to a $50 fee for every one of those background checks that gets run. So now you're forcing law-abiding citizens to pay a substantial increase in cost to enforce a law that may or may not have any effect.
As for revenue that Uncle Henry's gets from advertisements for guns, Webb says it's not as significant as some other categories in the publication, like automotive and pets. But if question 3 is passed, he says the magazine will look at tightening rules for how guns are advertised for sale. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And for parched southern Maine, suffering from a severe drought, there's little relief in sight. That's according to the state's Drought Task Force, which met for the second time today. The task force assessed reports from across the state and found that severe drought conditions persist in the southern part of the state. Northern Maine, on the other hand, continues to have sufficient rainfall. Bruce Fitzgerald directs the Maine Emergency Management Agency.
We definitely are still in drought conditions. So the rainfall and even the humidity, even though it feels like we're living in a cloud right now, doesn't do anything for our groundwater levels. And that's really the indicator for drought conditions.
Fitzgerald says there are scattered reports of private wells going dry, but no problems with public water supplies. He says firefighters have had to spend more time dousing fires in southern Maine, but most of the state's agricultural crops are doing well amid harvest season, with the exception of a few crops in southern Maine. Coming up, amid all the political campaign rhetoric about immigration, we meet a Mexican-American family that's establishing roots in down east Maine. Down in Washington, Maine's two U.S. senators are pushing for Congress to provide at least another $181 million to help fight the nation's drug crisis. Mal Leary has more.
Maine Senator Angus King took to the Senate floor Thursday to urge support for additional funding for CARA, the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, that was passed earlier this summer but not fully funded. The measure authorizes several new grant programs to help communities combat substance abuse and overdose deaths, and to expand treatment and prevention efforts. King says failure to fund treatment and prevention programs is like sending a fire department to a major fire with no water to put it out.
Since we passed that bill and failed to fund it, 15,000 people have died. 78 a day, 3 an hour. Have died because we haven't acted on funding.
King told the Senate that Maine is suffering as much as any state with the drug crisis affecting all ages and backgrounds and causing a record number of deaths from drug overdoses. He urged the Congress to fund at least the $181 million in new spending that is authorized in the legislation, even though he says more is needed. Maine Senator Susan Collins serves on the Senate Appropriations Committee and agrees with King that the least that can be done is to fund what's been authorized, even though the bill her committee has approved would go further.
Additional funding is needed, and some of that is included in the bill that funds the Department of Health and Human Services, but unfortunately, that's an appropriations bill and is thus held up.
Held up, Collins says, because the House has not completed its work on its version of the appropriations bill. And now it appears Congress will not act on the dozen bills that comprise the annual federal budget. Continuing resolutions are based on existing programs and funding levels. So Collins says it will be a battle to add spending for the new programs, as well as expand existing ones in any spending package to keep the government operating. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
In South Portland last night, the City Council voted yes on a largely symbolic ban on certain landscape pesticides. The new ordinance doesn't carry any penalties, but it would ask residents not to use and retailers not to sell an array of products, including Roundup and a class of pesticides known as neonicotinoids that's been linked to a decline in honeybee populations. Six of the city's seven council members voted for the ordinance. Linda Cohen cast the one dissenting vote. Cohen says she's in favor of taking action against the use of many chemical pesticides, but she thinks it should be done at the federal or at least the state level.
Unless you've got everyone around you following the same ordinances, you know, the impact that you're looking for is not going to be there. With us, we're worried about Casco Bay, and I get that, and that's a serious concern for me. But unless every community around us falls in line and does this, it doesn't make a difference.
The ban will apply to city properties starting next May and broaden to private property the following year. It will expand to cover two privately owned golf clubs in 2019. Ogunquit passed a similar measure last year. Even without enforcement, South Portland's ban could be significant because it could be seen as a model by other larger communities in the state, including Portland. Meanwhile, one of the volatile political topics of 2016, not just in America but in Europe as well, is that of immigration and resettlement. Here at home, GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump has put Mexico at the center of his rhetoric, proposing a Berlin-style wall along the southern border. Today, we begin a series that aims to capture the stories of Maine people who are directly affected by this debate over immigration, including migrant workers and their children. Jennifer Mitchell takes us down east to meet a Mexican-American family that's trying to lay down roots.
It's a warm, sunny, down east day. Route 1 is still busy with visitors bound for the Schoodick Peninsula. The building just off the road in true rural Maine fashion houses a hair salon in one half and a modest-looking eatery in the other, simply advertising Mexican takeout.
She's been going good. People has been coming more and more all the time.
That's Peter Valencia. He and his wife, Teresa, have recently opened up the Down East Mexican Takeout in Gouldsboro, a town better known for its lobster rolls than its flautas. But the couple is hoping the locals will develop a craving for their tacos, tortas, huarache, and pambazo. As a fledgling business, the restaurant is in the tough trial period of its very first season. But Valencia and his wife say they really wanted to have their own business and bring something new to the community. He says some of the items on the menu are unfamiliar and people often have to ask what it is and how to eat it.
Well, they like it, so that's a good thing.
Valencia was born in California but raised in Michoacan, Mexico, where he learned to cook by watching his mother, who would sometimes sell street food. He and Teresa have both done a variety of jobs, from picking nuts in California to fishing and making balsam wreaths. Valencia has been in Maine for 16 years now, and like many Mexican Americans, his family is scattered. Some are still in Mexico, some in California, others working farms in Georgia, and some are just pulling up in a big family car to give him a hand at the new restaurant.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
Are nice you Carla?
Yes.
Hi, nice to meet you finally. Hi.
This is Camelin, my wife.
What's your name?
Camelin.
Carla Mondragon is 22 years old. She's Peter's cousin. A newlywed, she and Camelin, a Mexican-American from Texas, have just celebrated their first wedding anniversary. And the girl with them is their young daughter, who wants to make sure we get her name right.
M-A-D-A-L-Y-N-E.
They call her Maddie for short.
Do you want to go to Peter's house, Maddie? Play with the kids?
See a movie? They watching E.T.
Inside, another family member, Yesenia, is behind the counter taking orders and getting ready for the lunchtime rush.
Downey's Mexican takeout.
Kids, cousins, weddings, and a new family business. There's nothing terribly unusual about any of it, except that the family's foothold in the country is anything but firm. Mondragon is seeking citizenship through her marriage to Camelin. She is officially still a citizen of Mexico and has been granted work permits because her parents brought her over as a child. They had come here to work at the now-closed Stinson Sardine Cannery when Mondragon was 10 years old. It was 2 years before she could speak English. Mondragon says in those days, she was homesick for Mexico.
I remember two classmates who, one day I was looking up the Mexican flag, obviously because I missed it, and I missed everything about it, and I was looking up my city on the computer, and they came up to me, and I wasn't sure what they were saying. All I know is they were making fun of me.
¿Otra vez? No. ¿Quieres más órdenes?
Most of the people she met growing up down east were welcoming, but she says she was bullied at times, and it steeled her to succeed. She learned English, made friends, played sports, and took on a variety of down east summer jobs, from processing sea cucumbers in Millbridge to picking lobster. Her parents eventually decided to head back home to Michoacán. By that time, Mondragon was 18 and decided she wanted to put down her roots in down east Maine. It was a tough decision, but one her parents supported, primarily because of her sexual identity.
They think, Maine or America is a lot more free, where you can speak what, you think and be who you are. So they're happy I'm here. They think it's the best decision I've made.
But then the political climate in the U.S. took a turn.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best.
In a speech launching his campaign in June, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump characterized Mexican immigrants this way.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting.
It's concerning how much hate he's bringing.
Mondragon and wife Camelin both say they never felt uncomfortable or judged in Maine before until this year. Mondragon says she's more aware of the brownness of her skin, of the way she speaks, and even the shortness of her haircut and the fact that she's married to a woman. But just like she did back in grade school, Mondragon says she's more determined than ever to succeed in America. And she says she refuses to become cynical about people.
I have American friends who are truly my family, and, I would do anything for them. Like, I know they would do anything for me. And they don't look at my skin color or who I am. They just look at my personality and the person who I am. And I'll be here as long as, not Trump says, but as long as God says, I'll be here.
So this is home?
Yes. No doubt. It is my home.
Mondragon hasn't seen her parents for 4 years. She's hoping that she, Camelin, and Maddie can travel together as a family to see them in Michoacán in a couple of years, perhaps as a new citizen. Meanwhile, in Gouldsboro, Peter and Teresa's plan is to keep on cooking. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
With regards to tropical humidity, this is as rich as it gets in Maine. That will promote the reoccurrence of widespread nocturnal fog across southern Maine. At the same time, a few showers and lonely thunderstorms will transit the state to focus north, near record warmth, 60s statewide. A wind shift tomorrow morning will jettison most of the overcast. Just a few clouds will loiter about the far north. Bright and sticky for most. A dramatic temperature variation. Low 70s north, upper 80s south. It will be slightly less humid at last Saturday. Bright morning sunshine will yield to an overcast west of the Kennebec. Sunshine plentiful north and east. 70s to near 80, warmest throughout the interior. A notable cool front laden with showers and isolated thunder will sweep across Maine overnight, and clearing will occur west and south by midday Sunday, north and east during the afternoon. 70 north, 83 south. Early next week will be lovely, more seasonable, 60s north, 70 south, with lower humidity. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public Broadcasting.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 8, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Mal Leary, Patty White, Jennifer Mitchell, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We welcome your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.